Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcio Land Podcast of the Week. So, guys, normally I don't tease an episode ahead of time, but I recorded an interview yesterday that really had me buzzing, so I wanted to tease it a little bit. So on today's podcast, you're going to hear a great interview with Juve's former social media manager for English. Technically, his job title was former digital editor, English language at Juventus, Daniel Robertson. I think anyone, if you're a Juve fan, you'll love it. If you hate Juve, you'll love it. If you're someone that wants to learn about social media, you'll love it. If you just want to hear an amazing life story of how someone from Texas ended up running Juve's English account, I think you'll really enjoy it. But we also have a lot of other great content on the podcast. Our main man from Italy, Thousand Names, is back with his game picks, and boy, is he in fine form. We are going to do Twitter questions next week, just because the interview ran a little bit long, but it was for good reason. But before we get to those two things, I'm joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we saw in the Champions League the past few days. So I'm going to ask you to kind of project to the last match. So Napoli, with their win against Red Star, they find themselves at the top of the group. And, you know, when you looked at the draw, that's really impressive. But they are going to be traveling to Liverpool for the last game. And Klopp's team has to win this match to get out of this group. Napoli just needs a draw. So I have to ask you, Alex, you follow the Premier League a lot more than I do. I think in Serie A, Napoli is one of your go-to teams. How do you kind of see this one playing out? You know, we're going to preview it as it gets closer, but I want to get your gut reaction to this game.
Yeah, well, seeing that Napoli just needs to not lose, meaning Liverpool needs to win, I give Napoli a huge advantage. And that goes beyond the fact that Liverpool need to win and Napoli don't need to win. I give Napoli a huge advantage because, David, as much as I love Maurizio Sarri, and I'm definitely loving Maurizio Sarri. In fact, I'm coming off a high right now. Chelsea just won, and I absolutely love Sarri. But something that Sarri is kind of known for is a classic 4-3-3, and last year he really ran some of his players into the ground, especially his attacking three. Well, now Carlo Ancelotti has changed things up at Napoli, and I would definitely say, David, whether they're a better or worse team, that's not really ready up for debate. It's not. We're still way too early in the season to at all compare this year's Napoli to last year's Napoli. But they might be a more well-rounded team, this Napoli team. They might be a more versatile team. And that's huge credit to Carlo Ancelotti, but also huge credit to some of the players. You gave Lorenzo Insigne props and winners and losers earlier in the week. In fact, that he changed his position. A lot of their players have really bought into what Carlo Ancelotti has done. They play a little bit more of a 4-4-2, but they can be adaptable. They can go to a 4-3-3. So I think Napoli will be really well prepared for this Liverpool game. I think Liverpool is a little bit, David, and I actually like this analogy I'm about to make, are a little similar to last year's Napoli, where their front three is going to be their front three. It's absolutely going to be Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino, and Mohamed Salah. Now, it's a lethal front three, but we kind of know what they're going to do. So I really feel like Carlo Ancelotti, who has been around the block, he's a very experienced manager, he will be able to put up a pretty good game plan against this Liverpool side, knowing that Liverpool are going to need to go all out. So I do give Liverpool a little bit of a chance just because they're lethal. They can be really hot, and when they're hot, they can score 3, 4, 5 goals. Also, they only have Bournemouth before this game, so it's Bournemouth away, but it's not exactly a huge Premier League fixture, so maybe they could rest a player or two in that game leading up to the Napoli one. But after the Napoli one, they have Manchester United, so hopefully they're not going to be distracted because both of those are going to be big games. So I give Napoli a huge advantage because they have the personnel and they have the manager to really have a good game plan for just this one specific game where they know Liverpool are just going to be going balls to the wall, trying to create magic with their attacking three, which once again reminds me of Napoli last year. So I really would be surprised if Liverpool got the 3 points. It is going to be at Anfield. So that is a tick in Liverpool's box. So there definitely is a chance, but I just think this Napoli is so well-equipped, David, to handle this type of a match, and I do give a lot of credit to Carlo Ancelotti for that. So now that I've kind of foreshadowed my prediction more or less, David, we're talking about Napoli in this match, of course, a Serie A team in the Champions League, but Inter certainly also have something very exciting in their last match day six in the Champions League. They still need to try and move on. So who do you think it's more important for to move on perception-wise, Napoli or Inter?
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know, how it would come off and also a little bit how it would impact their season. So I think, you know, Inter going into the draw, they were in the fourth pot. You know, they hadn't been in the Champions League for a while. They hadn't done well in the Europa League. So they knew they were going to have a tough draw. When the draw came out, we talked about it. I think there were very few people that gave them much of a chance to get out of their group. But they surprised us. They beat Spurs at home. I think, you know, beating PSV in the Netherlands was, you know, maybe a little bit surprising to a lot of people. And granted, you know, they came close to getting a draw against Spurs, which would have given them the opportunity to have destiny in their own hands when they faced PSV at San Siro. But that goal that came from Eriksen took that off the table. But I have to say, you know, a few weeks, you know, before the Champions League started, you know, before they played against Spurs at San Siro, they had a loss to Parma. I don't think any Inter fan would have expected this. And when I look at, you know, Inter's goal for the season, it's to get back to the Champions League next year, just build some momentum, get higher in the rankings, so next year they can get a little bit of a draw. So I'm sure there'd be some disappointment for Inter if they don't qualify, but at the same time, I think it would be pretty easy to spin. You know, their objective's really more focused on Serie A. Napoli, on the other hand, I think for them, the perception is much more important that they get out of this group. And I don't say that only because they can control their destiny more than Inter. You look at the Serie A standings, they're already 8 points behind Juve. I think this year is going to be very hard to have any sort of Scudetto race. We all know how Napoli performed, or more importantly, their lack of good performances in Europe last season. They bring in Ancelotti, you know, who has a great European DNA. So for me, it's much more important for Napoli to get out of this group. I actually think, you know, if Napoli can have a pretty good run in the Champions League, like keep developing their brand outside of Italy, it would be a big plus. And also from a financial point of view, it's more important for Inter to get the extra revenues of getting out of the group stage. They are almost done with financial fair play. The expectation is this will be this summer transfer window will be the last one where they have some restrictions, but any extra revenue helps. Napoli, on the other hand, they've been a club that's been very financially stable. It wouldn't hurt them as much. So in my opinion, it's much more important for Napoli to get out of the group. I think, you know, it would really be good for their brand. I think Ancelotti would establish himself even more at the club by making it happen.
Yeah, I can't wait for this final round here in the group stage. Match day six in the group stage can either be really exciting when you have teams who are still fighting for their place in the next round of the Champions League, or it can be really boring when teams have already qualified or have already been eliminated. But I'm definitely excited for a couple games specifically. What I'm also excited for, David, is this upcoming segment. We didn't do it last week because we were off, but we are looking ahead to this weekend in Serie A. So we have you and Thousand Names once again making your game predictions. So what do we have, David?
Yeah, I actually missed Thousand Names. We haven't had him in a while for a combination of things, but he is our oracle. I love getting tweets. I think people are starting to get his sense of humor with the picks. We don't take them too seriously. For those of you that understand Italian or are learning Italian, his tweets will give you a little bit more sense of what he's all about. So he sent me, you guys by now know the drill, Thousand Names picks the three games for which we make our predictions. I get to know his picks ahead of time, and then I make them on the podcast. So the first game that Thousand Names sent me a prediction for is Juve traveling to Tuscany to face Fiorentina. Big rivalry match for Fiorentina. And Thousand Names has this as 1-1, goals by Pjanic and Benassi. The comment is the former Torino captain makes all of the honest Italy happy with this goal. Benassi used to be the captain in Torino. He says Pioli is going to embarrass tactically Allegri, but that Chiesa is going to dive during the game. So I had noticed that he didn't predict that Ronaldo was going to miss a penalty kick. So I asked him and he goes, absolutely, Ronaldo's going to miss a penalty kick. So in Italian, Fiorentina, Juve, 1-1, Pjanic, Benassi. L'ex capitano del Toro fa godere l'Italia onesta. Allegri portato a spasso tatticamente da Pioli. Chiesa si tuffa. So Fiorentina has been really in a funk. They haven't won in 6 matches there. The match against Juve, though, is like the Super Bowl for them at the Franchi Stadium. Juve's on a roll. They have a big lead. You know, they're coming off a Champions League game. I'm going to agree that it is going to be a draw here. Fiorentina has really struggled scoring. I'm going to give it 1-1 as well. And I'm going to give a goal to former Fiorentina player Cuadrado. And I'm going to have Simeone get out of a funk. And, man, Simeone has been really bad this season. So next game by Thousand Names. He has Napoli travels to Bergamo. This is the Monday night game against Atalanta. For those of you that follow Serie A closely, in the past, Atalanta with manager Gasperini, they used to really have Sarri and Napoli's number. They always did very well against them. But now it's with Ancelotti on the bench. And Thousand Names thinks this is going to be a positive change for Napoli because he has Napoli winning this game 3-0 on the road. Braced by Insigne, goal by Koulibaly. He says that Ancelotti is gonna be so delusional that now he's gonna think he can actually win the Scudetto again. He says that Lorenzo il Magnifico and that's Insigne is gonna show Ronaldo how it's done. So this is a tough. I'm gonna read it in Italian. Atalanta Napoli 0-3. Doppietta Insigne, Koulibaly. Ancelotti si illude di poter ancora vincere lo Scudetto. Lorenzo il Magnifico fa vedere a Ronaldo come si fa. So Atalanta last week suffered a really brutal loss to Empoli. They had been on a good roll before the international break. This is going to be a tough game. I'm going to have it as a draw, and I'm going to have it as 1-1. Atalanta has 2 strikers out. Ilicic suspended. Barrow looks like they're out, but they're pretty stacked up front. So I'm going to give a goal to Duvan Zapata, and I'm going to give a goal to Zielinski, who's been struggling. So hopefully he can get back on track. So last game, and this is the big match of the weekend, Sunday night game. This one's going to be on ESPN with our friend Matteo Bonetti. Roma-Inter, he has it as 1-1. Goal by Schick, own goal by Fazio. He says that Spalletti, the fix is in. He's going to rob Roma in this. And he's going to say that Marotta is going to begin to feel what it's like not being at Juve. So it looks like, there's going to be a fix the other way as well. And that Il Palazzo, so that's like the system, the dark state, if you will, is afraid that Inter is going to make catch up on the standing. So that's why Roma is going to get a point. So sorry, I mistranslated. He said that Spalletti is going to get robbed by Roma, which makes the comment more sense, that Marotta is going to start feeling what it's like being against Juve here. In Italian, Roma-Inter 1-1, Schick autogol Fazio, Spalletti derubato a Roma, Marotta inizia a capire cosa si prova a stare contro la Juve, il Palazzo teme la rimonta dell'Inter. So Roma's decimated this match. They got a lot of players out. De Rossi, Dzeko, Pellegrini, El Shaarawy. They're going to have their super young front line. I'm actually going to go with an Inter win here. And you got to wonder what that means for Di Francesco after the loss to Real Madrid. I'm going to have Inter winning 1-0, and I'm going to give a goal to Icardi, who needs it. So those are our predictions. Thousand Names, and I agree. Fiorentina, Juve as a draw. I have Atalanta, Napoli as a draw. He has Napoli winning. I have Inter beating Roma, and he has it as a draw. So thank you, Thousand Names. We're going to have him live on the podcast soon. It's been way too long since we heard from him. So that's your Serie A preview with the game pick. So now let's get to the main event. I talked about it up front. We're going to interview Daniel Robertson from Juve social media. So a couple of notes on this interview. It was a lot of fun. One thing that you're going to hear that's actually pretty hilarious is we recorded this last night. And you'll hear Daniel said that while he was working at Juve, he was always waiting for a Serie A club to clap back at Juve on Twitter. He was always ready in case they did. And he was always surprised that nobody ever did. And right this morning, our friends at IS Roma English digital team, Juve's account tweeted, "Are you in Rome? Don't forget to visit our new Juventus store on Via Nazionale 55. And IS Roma English retweeted that with this quote, "Finally, something in Rome you really don't need to see." So there you have it, Daniel. The clapback happened after you left Juve, unfortunately. So I really enjoyed this interview for a lot of reasons. Because social media is something that we like to talk about on the podcast. A lot of you guys on here, I'm sure, would love to work in the position Daniel was at Juve. It's really a great life story. You'll hear it. I often get asked how someone based in Boston could be working with Di Marzio. So I turned the tables on him and I learned how someone originally from Texas ended up managing Juve's account. So I think you'll really enjoy it. If you like this interview, it was a lot of work to make it, as well as I think it came off. So if you like it, please support what you do. Leave us a review. That's a great way to support the podcast. Please help us promote this interview because I think it's definitely really worthwhile. So because it went pretty long, we're going to do a lot of Twitter questions on Monday. We might not have a guest just to catch up on all the questions and for you guys to hear more from me and Alex. So I want to take this opportunity to thank you guys for your support and enjoy this interview. Okay, guys. So I've been teasing that we were going to have a first-time guest, someone that was going to be really intriguing because he has a great story to tell, has a great background that has to do with not only calcio, but the biggest team in Serie A right now, and also social media, something that a lot of our listeners are interested. So I am beyond thrilled to be joined by Daniel Robertson, who is the former digital editor leading the English language coverage at Juventus, running their Twitter account. He's now back in the United States working in social media. You can find him over at Blinkfire Analytics. We're going to ask him about that as well. He previously worked in social media and MLS at FC Dallas and Sounders FC. So, Daniel, it's a real pleasure. We've been talking about this, doing this podcast for quite some time, and I'm thrilled to have you. So welcome to Calcioland.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's really funny. If you had told me 3 or 4 years ago I would be doing a Serie A football podcast, I would wonder how that came about, but I'm really happy to be here.
Great. And we are going to find out how it came to this, to us uniting to do this podcast. So I'm very curious to hear this story. But listen, Dan, before we get to all that, and I want to hear about your experience, I'm going to ask you some couple of general questions on social media, because you've covered it in MLS here in the United States. You had a great adventure in Italy, so you're really a great subject matter expert on this. So tell me a little bit, how do you think social media has changed the way fans relate to their favorite teams and the leagues that they follow?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if you think about it, 10 years ago, the only way you could relate to your teams and players was going to games and reading articles in the newspaper, waiting on TV for like one highlight. But now it's instant gratification, and social media is basically the front door of every sports team, because, previously you kind of just had to go to a game, watch what they did on TV, what they did on the field, and you say, well, that's what that team stands for. But now teams can completely craft their brand and their identity from social media. And so I think it's really changed everything completely. I mean, I think personally, man, I'm so glad that Twitter and Instagram were not around when I was a teenager, and we see now players, I mean, this isn't Calcio, but I read an article yesterday about an NBA player saying that he's seen players play harder because they don't want to be shamed on social media after the game. I mean, it's changing everything. And so you have teams who can completely change their identity just based around social media. And I think the flip side of that is teams are now under an enormous strain because they have to keep up. And whereas in the past, maybe they just had to figure out, oh, what's a billboard we create or what's a TV ad that we're running. Now you have to have almost completely in-house creative agencies. You're seeing that with a lot of teams now. And so, I mean, I think it's just completely changed everything, and it's brought players a lot closer to fans, which I think is a good thing. And boy, in Italy, it gives people even more to talk about.
That's for sure. So you hinted a little bit at this as part of your answer. I want to see if you want to expand a little bit more on this. Like in this new digital world, and now, you know, fans can follow teams across the globe. You know, we see teams trying to establish a presence in different countries, different continents. Tell me how important it is for a club to have a strong presence on social media.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned how you can follow things much easier now. Because I think about in America now, when I wake up on a Saturday, Sunday morning, I can watch Bundesliga, Premier League, Serie A, La Liga. And if you're creative, you can do it completely for free on your phone. And not to mention MLS, not to mention all of the other sports, you know, offerings here. And so the competitiveness is just that much higher now for all these teams as they compete for eyeballs. And so it wasn't like in the past where if you're say, oh, I'm a La Liga fan and we get one game a week and it's always going to be Barcelona, Real Madrid. Well, now you can get into Valencia. Now you can watch Atletico, and now you can watch all of these teams however you want because every game is available online. And so for social media, that's how many teams are going to get people, you know, to follow them. And there is a gap now that needs to be filled in between matches. And this is how teams do it. And this is how teams can say, oh, maybe before you only knew us because of one player we had, but well, actually this is what Valencia stands for. And this is what Genoa stands for. And this is what Fiorentina stands for, and all these different things. And so, I mean, if you're fighting uphill and you don't have those budgets, like the top six or seven teams in the world do, it's absolutely vital. It's your only way to break through the clutter and turn some fan, you know, from just kind of seeing you once or twice to actually becoming a fan, because now more than ever they can watch you.
Yeah, very interesting. I've gotten to know very briefly Paul Rogers, who runs Roma's account. And one thing that he says, and it makes a lot of sense, is that now people who aren't necessarily Roma fans just follow the account and they're really into it. And it's really a great opportunity. So let me ask you this. And, you know, you've been running social media for clubs in MLS in Italy. And, you know, I have a feeling like, you know, for Juve, you know, their image is very different than Roma, and maybe they can't run the account that way. So tell me in general, what do you think are some of the best practices on social media for teams? And how important, you mentioned branding and the identity of a club, how important is it for a club to stay true to their identity with what they do on social media?
Well, again, you nailed it in the sense of, you know, like a Juve versus Roma, because we all see what Roma does on social, and they're so funny and they do great things. The question is, though, okay, you might have people following you who are following you and wouldn't have if you didn't kind of do the kind of silly things and creative things that they do on social. But how does that convert to a brand? And how does that convert to the things that maybe people don't want to talk about, but sponsorships and sales and et cetera? And I think that the best practice really for social media for teams is identifying what your brand is and creating the content that pushes that. I'll go to an example of a former job at FC Dallas. Any listeners who follow MLS know that FC Dallas is known for youth development, and they're known as the team that has won youth national championships. So at FC Dallas, maybe we were doing more content on our social media based around our homegrown players, just to keep pushing that narrative of, this is who we are, this is what we do. Maybe we lost the game this week, but look at these three players from Dallas who got lots of minutes on the field. That's the positive thing. And so when you talk about like a Juventus versus Roma, I mean, you nailed it. The Juventus brand is, I would like to think, one that's very classy, and they're kind of a team that doesn't concern themselves with any other teams and just goes about their business in the best way possible. And so I think that's kind of what we tried to do with Juventus. Now, certainly we, if you notice, no Serie A teams ever clap back at Juventus. They never tweet anything at Juventus. They may go after other teams, but they never go after Juventus. And we were never going to go after other teams, but we were ready if someone came at us, because it is within the Juventus brand to not back down, you know? They wouldn't go after someone else, but they are not going to back down if you come after them. And it never really happened. And we were all kind of hoping one time that someone would come at us, but it never happened. And that's okay. But, you know, knowing your brand and pushing that is the most important thing, because, and I think also it's really important to bring the fans into the conversation, and Roma does an incredible job of that, because I'll always say an angry fan is better than an apathetic fan. Mm. Apathy is what teams have to avoid, you know, because if you're angry, at least you care, you know?
Yeah.
So if your fans are angry at you at Twitter and they're telling you, you suck and whatever, well, at least that can turn around, and those same fans are going to be the biggest advocates for you 95% of the time otherwise. So yeah, just knowing your brand and really building that.
Awesome. So, Dan, let's start talking a little bit about you, and I'm going to turn tables on something that happens to me a lot. A lot of people, you know, I've been working with Di Marzio for a long time. A lot mm-hmm. of people are like, how did this guy in Boston get an affiliation with Di Marzio and all that? So I want to hear your story on how the whole Juve things happen. But before we get to that, you know, a lot of our listeners are interested in social media. They'd love to do the job that you did. And before we get to your resume, the places that you worked at, tell me a little bit about your background. How did you become someone that could, you know, work on social media for a club? Is there anything you studied specifically for this?
Sure. So I wasn't actually a huge football fan growing up. I was a very casual World Cup fan until I was about 18 and got a car and could actually drive to downtown Dallas to go to the games here, the MLS games. And that kind of got me into football. And so when I went to college, I went to University of Oklahoma, which has a good journalism program. And I wanted to be a newspaper sports writer. But this is back in 2004. And from the time I started to the time I graduated, newspapers practically went out of business. So I covered university athletics for Oklahoma. And our American listeners will know, you know, Oklahoma is one of the huge schools for collegiate American football, basketball. And we had guys like Blake Griffin, Adrian Peterson while I was there. It was a great time. And so I had a lot of opportunities to kind of hone my craft a little bit in writing from that side. And then right before I graduated, the semester before I graduated, I interned with FC Dallas for a summer in their kind of digital department, which at the time was much smaller than you would talk about digital departments now. But all I did was kind of find out who the person was running that department. And I reached out to them by email and said, hey, about 3 months before the internship would happen. And I said, hey, do you offer internships? And, you know, I'll give a few lessons over the next few 15-20 minutes. But the one big lesson, if you want to get your start, is to look for an internship with a team, and don't just apply online. Find the people to reach out to.
Yeah.
Because while I was at FC Dallas, you know, having been an intern, it was something I really took on to bring on interns myself. And the ones that typically got the job, because some, especially in the summers, you'd get 30-40 applicants. The people who reached out to me in the spring were the ones that typically got the jobs, because, you know, it's literally sending one email, but you have to be proactive about it and to do those things to get your foot in the door. From there, after I graduated, there weren't really many opportunities, and I was kind of getting away from sports, which I didn't want to do, but, you know, you've got to pay your bills. And I had some extra free time. So I started a blog in 2010, just covering FC Dallas and giving my opinions on what I saw in the game and things like that. And from there, I was lucky enough where FC Dallas isn't a team that has a lot of media covering them. So I was able to get a media pass, and I slowly got respect within the team and was able to interview some players. From there, I got a break with MLS where they needed someone to cover the games and a little part-time job. And from there, I made more and more connections within the team. So when a full-time job opened up in their digital department, I was able to get the job. And from there, I worked there for 4 years, with, you know, kind of growing responsibility. And that's kind of how I got my break into the industry. And so, you know, for those out there who may not have a lot of, may not know people, have a lot of experience, just look for places to volunteer. You know, 8 years ago, I was just a guy running a blog covering FC Dallas, you know, so it's certainly nothing that the cream at the end of the day. And I would say today there's even more opportunities than before, because through Twitter and through, I mean, your producer, his YouTube channel, it's fantastic. And he's going on by himself through his own initiative to create those things. And so, you know, the cream rises to the top. And for those out there that want to do a job like this, start a podcast, start a blog, start a YouTube channel. These things are free, and the barriers to entry are smaller than ever before. And through Twitter, you can raise your profile very quickly. And so, you know, there's no time to start like the present.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You mentioned, you know, when you were getting started, the death of newspapers and all, and there's never been a better time for someone without a background like that to make it happen. So I completely agree with you, and I can relate so much to a lot of what you said. So let's start talking about your affiliation with Juve. So you mentioned you were a casual football fan and used to watch the World Cup. So before you even were contacted by Juve, and I'm like, can't wait to hear how all that happened, what did you know about Juve, let's say a couple of years or even a year before you got the job there?
Sure. So, I mean, I've been a huge football fan for a long time. I studied abroad in London in college. And so, you know, I've been watching football a lot. But Serie A has never been the leaders in marketing themselves to the United States. So, you know, guys like you are fighting the good fight, but they, you know, and it is improving. But I knew Juve obviously through Champions League and through FIFA. I loved playing as Juve on FIFA, so you know all the players. I mean, they were one of the best teams to play as. So of course I knew all the players and everything. But I actually was not as familiar with the tradition of the team, and honestly, just how huge they were. I was really blown away by just how massive Juve is across Italy, and how loved they are and how hated they are, and just how important they are. Because when you run social media in America, it's kind of fun. Like, there's no, the media doesn't take it that seriously. Whereas at Juve, everything we said was basically a national statement. So you have a real responsibility there. And yeah, I grew to learn quickly just how much tradition the team had, and just how utterly huge they are.
Yep. So now let's get to the meat and potatoes of the interview. I know a lot of people, including myself, we chatted a little bit before we started recording, but I wanted to be surprised and find out here. So tell me a little bit, how did this all happen? How did you, from running social media and MLS, find yourself in Turin being in charge of, you know, working on Juve's English content? How did that all happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll quote Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And when I was kind of ready for something new after what I've been doing, I really just applied for a job online, an opening I saw online, and it said that they wanted a native English speaker for digital editor. And so, you know, I thought maybe I had a chance, but I figured 95% of the time that job is going to go, because I don't have an EU passport. So 95% of the time that job is going to go to someone with an EU passport. But I had my resume done. It wasn't really a big problem to submit the job application. And then one day out of the blue, I got an email for an interview. So I interviewed over Skype at first. And then it had just so happened that about 3 weeks after my interview over the phone, that my wife and I had a vacation planned where we were going to Germany and Denmark. And so I told them, hey, you know, if you want me to, no problem, I can do a detour over to Turin. And so we did that. And I went to the Juve offices and interviewed in person, which was really cool. And, you know, you're kind of just wondering what's going on here. This is crazy. And then a few months later, they offered me the job, and we had to, my wife and I had to think long and hard about it. But at the end of the day, that's an adventure that you can, for one, for a football fan, the opportunity to work for a team like that is something you could never turn down. And two, we both studied abroad in college and wanted to, to live in Europe at some point. And it's incredibly difficult if you don't have an EU passport. So, so we took the once in a lifetime trip, and then early July of last year, I flew to Turin and moved full time. And then my wife joined me, towards the end of August. We lived in a extended stay hotel for the first 3 months. And then we actually moved. This is going to make it sound much more glamorous than it was, because it was a very normal, apartment, but we moved into an apartment actually in the same building as, Chiellini in the middle of Turin. So, it was just an absolute, dream come true experience, in that sense.
So I have to ask you, because you mentioned Chiellini, he's probably one of the best at social media in Serie A. Were you kind of surprised? Did you know anything about what he does? Because what he does on social media is really quite impressive. For a while, he had more followers than Buffon and more iconic guys. So, and I'm putting you on the spot here. We didn't discuss this time, but you mentioned. So anything that stands out to you about what he does?
Well, for one, I think he's, and I'm not saying this as a negative to other players, I'm saying he is an incredibly genuine person, and I didn't have a whole lot of interactions with players day to day, but he always came off as just the nicest, and I mean, I would see him coming in and out of the apartment from time to time, and actually had a really good chat with him once on a preseason tour where we were doing a photo shoot, and he had some time and was really curious to know about MLS, actually. Not in a sense of, I'm not trying to break any news here. This was 18 months ago. So, I think he's the captain of Juventus, and I think he's very happy with that. He's always been an incredibly sharp, incredibly smart guy, incredibly genuine guy, very nice. And I think that comes across in his social media. So, I think people like that. People like people who are genuine and he's the captain of Juventus. He's one of the all-time greats, and he's truly one of the all-time great guys too.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, because we have some common friends. I hope he breaks the curse and is actually someone who can end his career at Juve. So great that he's interested in MLS, but hopefully he ends it there. So aside from ending up in the same building as Chiellini, what were some of the things that surprised you the most about your stay in Turin? It doesn't have to necessarily be about your team. It can be life about Italy, like anything at all. What did you not expect when you got on that plane to start this job?
Yeah, I this is what I love talking about, because I'm sure most people who listen, just fascinated by different cultures. And that was one of the things I was so excited about, because I always wanted to learn a different culture at some point in my life. And so I think I was surprised in Turin about how un-Americanized, or I don't want to say Westernized because it's Western Europe, but un-Americanized Turin was. I mean, it truly is in many ways, going back a couple of decades in life, and people still read the newspaper, and people still, just a lot of different things, because I'd traveled around Europe quite a bit. And never found anything, you know, really to be like that. But in Turin, you're talking about an old historic city where there's very little English spoken. And as opposed to Milan, which is an hour away, you know, which is basically would be like moving to New York in a lot of ways. And I know you as a Boston resident may or may not dispute this, but I actually, when my friends asked me back home, what was Turin like? I would compare it to Boston, because I said it's a city with a ton of history. It's a former capital where, you know, it was the capital when the Savoys were running the country, and the people can be surly and very rude on the surface and very skeptical of outsiders. But then once they accept you and you become one of them, they're incredibly warm people and some of the nicest people I've ever met. So I think that was just the how difficult it was in a lot of ways to adjust for the first couple of months. But obviously I did, and I really grew to love the city.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention Boston comparison. It never dawned on me, but I definitely see what you're saying. You see, I consider Turin to be so different than the rest of Italy. It reminds me a little bit more of France than Italy. So well said there. So look, this show, people tell us that we're very scripted, and in a lot of ways we are. I always like to send the guests the questions ahead of time. And I love it, though, when guests send me things that they want to talk about. And one topic you wanted to discuss was Cristiano Ronaldo's arrival at Juve. And only a foolish podcast host wouldn't want to talk about this. So let me ask you about this, because I know you were very involved on Cristiano's first day in Italy. So tell us a little bit the story about that.
Yeah, so, you know, people might think that the social media managers at teams have inside knowledge of transfers and control the transfer market with teams, and really nothing could be further from the truth. We prepare as much as we can for every player who's coming, and maybe in normal cases, maybe we have, 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours notice. Sometimes it's more. But with Ronaldo, it was one of those situations where, you know, the rumors are flying and everyone's kind of joking about it for the first week, and none of us think it's happening. And then suddenly, the more kind of leadership gets more serious about things, and they don't tell us that it's happening, but you can read between the lines and figure out what's going on. And then it happened, and it was a really funny story. When you work in social media for the teams, you know, we work a lot of nights and weekends with the way that the games are. And so you take random days off. Sometimes you're taking a Tuesday off, a Wednesday off, et cetera, during the week. And so I actually took the day off that Ronaldo was announced, because no one thought that, of course, we had creative ready and different things like that. You have to be ready. I can't tell you how many articles I've written about players that Juve has signed that they never signed.
Other podcast.
Well, look, it's going to be players that always came up in rumors. It's not going to be anything that anyone hadn't seen in rumors. But so I actually wasn't working that day, and I was at home. And then, you know, obviously the text messages start going, and that all happened. But the day that he came, it was actually my job to follow him around and do the little Instagram story, etc. When Cristiano Ronaldo arrived, which was certainly one of those moments where you just kind of are wondering how did this all happen. But I remember him coming in a back door of J Medical, because normally when the players come in, they come in the front door, and you know, you see the little the famous Sky Sports video of the player walking in the front door, and he signs a few autographs and whatever. But for Ronaldo, he comes in the back door and then walked out to the front, and there was barriers set up and just hundreds and hundreds of people out there. And you know, he came off to me as a really, really nice guy. I mean, he's incredibly professional, and he demands the people around him to be professional. But as a social media manager, that's all you can ask from players, as long as they're not, you know, jerks. He's the biggest player in the world. You have to be professional around him and have your ducks in a row. And so that was definitely a day I will not forget. I had my picture on Sky Sport quite a few times. I had friends sending me notes. And yeah, that was definitely one I'll tell my kids about one day.
Awesome. So I can imagine that must have been one of the highlights of your time in Italy, because that's really an amazing story. But tell our listeners a little bit about some of your other favorite moments working at Juventus.
Yeah, so we don't, obviously traveling to the games is the biggest highlights. I was lucky enough to be able to go on the 2 preseason tours, and then we would kind of trade off. We wouldn't travel for some Serie A games, especially the ones farther away, but we would travel for Champions League. And so I got to go to the Nou Camp when Messi had a brace. Of course, I was sad that Juve lost, but that was a few months after starting the job. And, you know, to get to see Messi have a masterclass at the Nou Camp is kind of a bucket list thing for any football fan. But the one that sticks out the most is certainly the Bernabeu, when Juve was down 3-0 going to the second leg in the Champions League last year, and had the 3-0 comeback. And that was one of those ones where one, being in the Bernabeu, because that's another kind of, you know, football fan bucket list. But when the comeback started, because we all knew that we had to score a goal in the first 10 or 15 minutes to have a chance. Mandzukic scores, and then he scores again before halftime, and it's 3-2, and we're all, the 5 or 6 Juve staff in the press tribune, we're all talking, and there was no doubt in our mind that we were going to win the game in advance. And then Matuidi scores. It's 3-3. Looks like we're headed for extra time. And then the situation happens with the penalty kick. And Buffon is giving his quote about how the ref has a dustbin for a heart. And I mean, I'm standing 5 feet away from him as he's giving the quote. You know, it's just, it's one of those things, just surreal moments where you're wondering how a kid from Dallas, Texas is sitting here in the mix zone. And then I can remember on the plane back, because when we would travel for Champions League, we actually traveled with the team on the team charter. And so I'm sitting there maybe 15 rows away as Gigi Buffon and Benatti are having a heated discussion about this play that the whole world is talking about.
Ooh.
And of course, you know, not a argument, but they're just, you know, talking about it like any player would. And I'm thinking to myself again, how did I get here? And unfortunately I couldn't hear them. So, and my Italian never got to the point where I probably could have understood everything that they were saying, but it was definitely one of those just unbelievable experiences and something I'll never forget.
Well, I could tell the Juve experience rubbed off on you, because you were very diplomatic on more than one occasion on this. So very well done. I definitely appreciate that. Because the last thing we want to do is get any of our guests in trouble. But well played there. So you talked about it towards the top. You mentioned, you know, take internships. You know, apply for jobs even if you feel you have no chance. But are there any other pieces of advice you'd like to share for anyone who one day would like to become like you? As you mentioned, it's incredibly remarkable based on your background and where you came from that you experienced these things firsthand. So any other advice you'd like to share to someone that wants to follow your career path?
Well, I think that if you're really at the bottom and trying to break in, start your own content. If you put in the hard work and you're good to people and you look for opportunities to volunteer, you know, the doors are going to open for you. And you just have to remember that the sports industry, both in European football and in the United States, is a very small industry in the sense of everyone talks to each other and everyone knows each other. And you never want to burn a bridge. You never want to treat someone bad, because that will always get around. But on the flip side of it, it's some of the best people in the world that we always are looking to help other people out and always looking to give advice, because most of us were in the same position that these people trying to break in were in one day. So if you put in the hard work and you look for your opportunities, and it is going to be hard at first, you're going to do a lot of volunteer work, a lot of work for very low pay. It does pay off. It does pay off in the end if you're truly talented enough and you know, you're just good to people.
Yeah, I think that's incredible advice that I second completely. Okay, yeah. So Dan, so now you're back in the United States. You're now at Blinkfire Analytics. Tell us a little bit what's going on there and the projects that you're working on. You have also your own site, DanielRobertson27.com. Very interesting. I think the listeners today really got some great sense. You have an amazing story. So tell us a little bit. What's going on now and the future for you?
Yeah, so Blinkfire is actually a company that we used at Juventus. That's how I got to know about it. And basically what Blinkfire does is it works in social media. We have teams, some of the biggest teams in Europe and some of the biggest teams in America, who when they post on social media and there are brands, they give us their brands that they want to spot. And when there are brands that are seen on a Twitter image, on an Instagram image, et cetera, our computer logs those and the teams give us access to their backend analytics. And so they can put a valuation on those posts. So you can know exactly how much it was worth when Juventus posted this Instagram photo of Cristiano Ronaldo celebrating a goal and the Jeep logo on the jersey is very prominently featured. And I know that some football purists will cringe, but at the end of the day, the game is a business, and the more intelligence you can have on the business and the better you do on your social media, the more staff you're going to get for your team, and the better your team is going to do, and the more revenue your team is going to get. And I realized as a social media manager that the better job I did featuring the brands prominently, the better things went for me internally. And so I'm kind of evangelizing that to the world. And it's great because I'm still working in football. I'm still working with a lot of football teams, but it's more working with a whole bunch of them instead of just one. And it's a lot of fun for me. It's a little bit slower than working for Juventus, which is amazing, but it's a pretty crazy job. And yeah, it's nice to slow down a little bit, be back in Dallas with my family. But I'm still watching every game. The one thing I didn't mention was, you know, for the first few months of working for Juventus, of course you want your team to win because it makes your life easier in your job. But I wasn't like a huge Juventus fan at first. I didn't have a connection to the team. But after that game at the Bernabeu, I think you become a big fan of your team when they get screwed more than when they win. And when I had never been angry about a Juventus loss, like terribly angry, before that game. And I was livid after the game watching, and he's playing for us now, so it's okay. But watching Ronaldo run around the field and just gesture towards the fans and everything, I was so angry. And that's when I became a huge Juventus fan. You know, now I'm watching every game, and I'm right there with all the other Juventini on the podcast.
Well, I have no words. I hope you had a quarter of the fun as I did doing this interview. What stands out to me, just an amazing life story. I mean, not just how you got to Juve, but even the parallel. You're pissed about the loss. You see Ronaldo celebrating. A few months later, you're in the videos when he shows up. So, Dan, I can't thank you enough. This was, without a doubt, one of the best interviews we've done so far. You know, we're going to keep following your work. I look forward to chatting with you again in the future. This was fantastic. So thank you so much for coming on Calcioland with me. It really made my day.
Yeah. And thank you, because I'm a listener to the podcast too. After I left Juventus, my wife and I traveled around Europe for about 6 weeks, and there was a lot of times on planes, trains, and automobiles. And I had the podcast twice a week. I was listening to it. So I appreciate what you guys do, and it's been a pleasure.